recent survey in over 27 countries reveals that 1 out of 5 young people identify as LGBTQ+. Another survey from last year found that almost half of all youth in the UK don't identify as exclusively heterosexual. Watch out, Daffod! There's more than one gay in the village.
The new movie musical Everybody's Talking About Jamie tells the true story of Jamie Campbell, a 16-year-old teenager who overcomes prejudice, beats the bullies, and steps out of the darkness and into the spotlight as a fabulous drag queen. The film is an adaptation of the award-winning West End musical, which was based on the documentary Jamie, Drag Queen at 16.
Today, Max Harwood and Lauren Patel, stars of the movie musical Everybody's Talking About Jamie, join us to look at the making of their first film. Max and his co-star Richard E. Grant's first time in drag and meeting the real-life Jamie Campbell. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. Hi, is this Max Harwood and Lauren Patel, stars of the new movie musical Everybody's Talking About Jamie?
I think yes. You've got the right number.
Hey, congratulations on the movie, guys, and congratulations on this being your first film, and for Max, your first time in drag. Ooh.
Yes, first time in drag. Yeah, it was crazy.
This is the first time also for your co-star, Richard E. Grant, who plays your drag mom, Loco Chanel. Now, folks who are listening to this remember Richard E. Grant from starring in How to Get Ahead in Business, from Doctor Who, Star Wars, and most recently played the alternate universe Loki in the Disney Plus series Loki.
Yes.
Now, I'm wondering, how did you guys get prepared? Because this must have been like a sort of Luke Skywalker, Obi-Wan Kenobi moment as actors, right? But also, both of you guys were discovering your drag personas and getting ready for this film.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, there's so many parallels between Jamie and Loco and Max and Richard. You know, you've got like a faded drag queen in Richard and a budding young drag queen in Jamie, and sort of Richard, very similarly to Loco, absolutely guided me through the process of doing my first film. It was a really sort of like beautiful parallel to live through, and he taught me so much. He's, you know, such an incredible person, an amazing actor, and he's just taught me to be generous, really, and to be open and to listen. And also, on the flip side of that, I mean, you will know if you've ever interviewed him or met him, he doesn't take himself too seriously. You know, he's like just really up for a laugh. So we had such fun making this film.
And as opposed to you, who is very dead serious in business.
Yeah, in business, very like, you know, doing my tax returns, you know.
Chill. Sure.
Did you guys cram a lot of Drag Race and Pose and getting ready for the role? And were you guys like, get the shoes, darling, get the shoes?
Mother Electra is here. No, I am. I'd already I've already watched Pose and Drag Race prior to being part of this Jamie verse. But yeah, Richard binged every single season of Drag Race and loved it and was so up for it. I mean, one day when he wasn't on set, he would just send me like a gif of Vanessa Vanjie Matteo doing the Miss Vanjie, Miss Van. Like, it was incredibly fun to see him give it his all, yeah, and get really into it.
Well, drag is certainly like a slippery slope. Sometimes you put on your first girdle or your first shoes, and then it's, you know, it's all downhill from there. Is it is it something you and Richard are going to continue forward?
Like a mother-daughter act.
Yeah, you know, we're going to travel together. We're going to do shows together. No, drag is really hard, isn't it? Like, I really learned that, like, it's a true art form. And I was very lucky, and Richard said the same. We're very lucky. We worked with, like, the Formula One racing car team that put us all together. We stood there and, you know, despite our research and our extensive rehearsals in Hills and performing, you know, creating our drag personas was done by an incredible design team as well, with hair and makeup and costuming and the direction from Jonathan Buttrell. So we were very lucky to be really, you know, held with a really fantastic budget as well.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, because most drag queens, it's like they just scrap by and do it and schlock things together.
And you're like, spare no expense. I want to look like a goddess.
Yeah, well, my first time in drag was like a packet wig and a skirt around my neck, singing and dancing to "Look at Me, I'm Sandra Dee," playing Rizzo for my nan in my living room. So the budget on that one wasn't quite the same as the budget on this.
Was your wig a towel?
No, my wig was, well, it should have been a towel. It was just like one of those like packet costume party city wigs.
Oh, that's not too bad.
Lauren, you're also there in the room with Max.
Hello.
So you got the acting bug young by watching musicals with your family as a kid. Which were your favorites?
I watched so many movie musicals as a kid. I think Mary Poppins and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang were my favorites. And we were quite lucky if we would like go and see like Oliver. We saw Oliver and Grease, and just being able to see them on stage was just so magical. Even as a kid, I was like, I can't believe people do this as a job.
You know, some British people really find Mary Poppins insufferable. You know, they don't like Dick Van Dyke's accent.
Well, I think it's a perfect film and I will take no criticisms on it whatsoever.
So Mary Poppins is like your North Star, your guiding light for show business. Yeah, Julie Andrews.
It just feels like a hug. It's wonderful.
It's interesting that Max brings up Rizzo, because usually the criticism, Dear Evan Hansen is one getting this, is that the actors who play these roles of teenagers or young adults are actually like in their 30s.
Because Rizzo was 28, or, you know, the actress who played
Stalker
her was
20. Stalker
Channing was 28 when she played it.
She's so iconic, though.
And listen, so is Ben Platt, so I'm here for it.
But you folks are very close to the age of high schoolers. I mean, how old were you? Because you filmed this in 2019, so you guys were like 19 and 21 at the time or something, or 22?
Yeah, so I was 21 and I turned 22 on set.
And I just turned 18 when I started.
Mm.
Yeah.
So this is material that hits close to home. You know, a recent survey released last month in 27 countries, they polled 19,000 people ages 16 to 18, revealed that a whopping huge 1 out of 5 individuals identify as LGBTQ. While another survey from last year found that almost half of all youth in the UK don't identify as exclusively heterosexual. Now, the musical is based on the 2011 television documentary Jamie, Drag Queen at 16, where Jamie Campbell faced a lot of rejection from her peers and her father. Is that the case for a lot of youth in the UK today? Is it more welcoming to be queer, to be non-binary, to be something else?
I mean, I can't speak for everybody, and I think that it depends where in the UK and who. I think that there are definitely some incredible activists in the UK who are striving and paving the way and making change and hopefully making more people feel more accepted, even if when they come out, they're not accepted by their immediate family or immediate friends or people in their life. There are definitely communities of people. And I think thanks to the internet, it's easier to find those people.
But I mean, for Max, you're openly gay. You're playing a role that's very close to your heart. Was what Jamie Campbell went through in the documentary mirrored what you went through in your own life?
Well, I suppose he came out when he was like, he was out when he was 16 at school. And I definitely wasn't. I was in the closet until I went to sixth form college in the UK. So I was about 18 when I came out.
Mm.
You know, went to school and college, you know, a few years after Jamie. And even when I was at school, you know, there was less queer youth that I knew in my local school. But like you say, I mean, the statistics really do speak for themselves, in the sense that, you know, that these, especially nowadays, you know, in the last couple of years with media and more visibility and the internet, that kids and young people are seeing themselves in a less binary way.
Why is that happening? Is it Drag Race? You can blame RuPaul. Give RuPaul the credit.
Yeah, I mean, I love that show to pieces, and I think it's you know, it's a huge thing. I think Drag Race has you know, pushed drag right into the forefront of mainstream media. You know, it's got such a huge following globally. That's obvious with the amount of franchises that they're putting out, and it's such a fantastic show. And you know, even on Drag Race themselves, you know, they've went on a journey of you know, cast in terms of their casting over the years and stuff. You know, we're seeing more non-binary and trans queens on the show now than we did before. So that's fantastic. And, you know, if those, if you can see it, you can be it. And I just think that is a reflection of society. And the more the conversations are being had, and the more people see that those things and those options aren't scary, and those aren't things to be frowned upon.
Don't dream it, be it, right? As yeah, Dr. Frankenfurter said.
Yeah, of course.
Have you guys gone to see Rocky Horror Picture Show?
I have, yeah.
Max, no. You have not?
I don't think I've ever seen it live. I've seen the okay. I've seen the DVD.
Lauren plays your gal pal, your bestie in the movie. And yeah. I imagine that in real time, because you guys are doing all these tours together, you know, Lauren, you got to take Max out to see Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Exactly. I've got to get him cultured, you know?
They dress up, don't they, because you were telling me, because we had this conversation about Rocky Horror in London, like literally last week before we came, and how me, Lauren, and our producer want to go, we're dressed up.
Because
it'd be so much fun.
Now, I imagine you guys actually got to meet the real life Jamie Campbell in preparing for this film. Was she like, don't do it this way? Or was she giving you a lot of direction on how to behave or act?
Yeah. We should just clarify that Jamie Campbell is a cisgendered male. So his pronouns are he, his.
Yes.
Is that correct? But he, I got to meet him.
The drag queen, too, though, we're referring to.
Fifi LaTrue?
Mimi.
Fifi LaTrue is the character he did, right?
Yes. Fifi LaTrue.
Yes.
Yeah. But Jamie, I got to meet him. It was a weekend. I was up in Sheffield rehearsing, and the producer was like, you're gonna meet Jamie today, and I was like, very scary. But it was really nice to have him and his family on board, and it was nice that they were part of the process, and they completely support what we're doing with, you know, in this, you know, telling his story, essentially.
Because Jamie's kind of shelved his drag character for right now, right? I think he's concentrating on fashion design or something. Am I right?
Yes.
She might want to, like, audition for Drag Race. I'm talking about the drag character.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Jamie might want to, you know, put the heels back on and work the runway, sweetie.
Let's hope. Work.
I mean, you've seen those competitions and those drag shows, and I imagine now that you're sort of becoming a very established actor in your own right, you know, certainly with this film, have you ever contemplated a career in drag?
I haven't, no, because I did it in this film and it was so difficult.
You're like, not for me.
What was the hardest part about the drag?
Probably like all of the tights and the corseting. I love makeup. I really, really do love makeup and fashion. So that side of it for me would be super exciting. And I've been known to like buy many, many a wig for no reason other than my own personal, you know, my own personal doing drag at home. But like, the whole thing is, you know, it takes more than it just being fun. I think, I think these queens are so, it's an art form and they're doing it every day and they're working the clubs and all of this stuff. And although I love doing it for this film, and I really respect it, it's something that I'll leave to the profession drag queens.
It is constricting. We could just do what Lady Bunny does and just wear what would you say, baby doll dresses where you don't have to tuck, you don't have to corset, you don't have to girdle, you don't have to pad. You just flowy outfits. That.
What about you, that Lauren? Have you been getting the drag bug?
Yeah, so I kind of, I knew of drag and like a lot of my friends like told me to watch Drag Race and I'd never gotten around to it. And then as we like, it was quite nice to be honest, like as we went through the film, I kind of discovered drag through watching Max playing, obviously, Jamie, and also like meeting all the incredible queens that are involved in this film, like Bianca and Anaphylactic, Myra Dubois, sort of a tutu, and just being able to see the whole process. It was so cool to see these incredible queens in real life.
Well, you guys are very brave to be working with Bianca Del Rio.
Yeah,
very nice. I mean, she has like a blink it and you'll miss it moment in the movie. She plays like your like an alternate universe version of your art teacher.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
Why was it so short? It was like, was she like in town and they're like, okay, Bianca, stand over here and say the line and get out of here.
I think it's one of those like fantasy moments for Jamie. That's probably
Jamie seeing everyone in drag. And
well, you know, it's interesting because I was in getting ready for this interview, you know, I was reading a lot about Lauren's love-hate relationship with social media. And to be a drag queen in this day and age also means to navigate the turbulent waters of social media. Most recently this week, you had Coco Peru getting chastised by the fans of Bianca Del Rio for being too snarky, too sassy on the internet, because a lot of people didn't even get the drag humor, the double entendres, the fact that, you know, sometimes throwing a shady comment is a way of showing affection. Yeah. How are you guys navigating social media for yourselves?
Well, I mean, I think first of all, about that, I have insulted Max so much on this press tour already. I hope that comes across. I think now I'm finding a good line of just, it's odd to be, you know, a 17-year-old who's using Instagram as any 17-year-old would, and then suddenly using it as a professional account and having a lot of attention from people you don't know and having to navigate that and set boundaries that make everybody happy. But I think that I've found that now, so that's good.
What are your boundaries?
Not for me to know.
But in terms of, like, you know, how you decide to interact with people, or are you talking about, like, topics that you're not willing to...
Yeah, like what I choose to post to a public account and what I choose to post to, like, you know, pictures of my friends and my family and private, you know, stuff about my, like, personal life.
One thing I don't understand is, like, why do these actors and celebrities don't hire somebody to manage it for them? So they don't, like, say something.
I think some people do, like, when they get to, like, a certain level. But, like, I mean, I don't need anyone to run my social media right now, because it's not, I mean, it's not crazy. And also, that costs money.
Yeah, and also, it's, like, it is nice to be able to have, like, somewhere to just post
and also connect
speak directly to people when you want to and have that line of communication, and, like, through social media, like I say, it's like a nice way to do it where it doesn't feel invasive. Like, you can turn your phone off if you don't want to be talking to anybody that day, you know?
Yeah, I imagine that for both of you guys, you know, doing this film is going to get a lot of attention. You know, like, we're taping this before the film is released to the public here in the United States. But if any indication of drag fans from RuPaul's Drag Race is, oh boy, you know, just take some time off.
Breathe.
Get a pedicure.
Yeah.
What are you guys going to do to treat yourselves once all this hoopla is over?
I'm going to take a holiday in Europe probably for like a week or two. Probably go to somewhere like Rome. Do like a sightseeing trip and try and like live my Lizzie McGuire movie fantasy.
Oh. Do the Roman holiday tour.
Yeah.
Visit all the places that Audrey Hepburn and Cary Grant went to.
Try and find a man who's going to buy you that.
Well, you know, best of luck. Everybody's talking about Jamie. You know, I guess it's going to be released on Amazon Prime Video and in theaters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Very exciting.
And I think September 17th is going to be on its online release, but it's going to be in theaters a little bit September 10th.
Yeah.
And, you know, for a lot of people who may not, like, if the plot feels familiar, think of this as Hannah Montana, Miley Cyrus. But instead of being a rock star, she's a drag queen.
But everybody knows the secret identity. Well, in the movie, too, Richard says that, you know, the first rule of drag is shoot first or they shoot you down. Now that you're a seasoned queen, is that something you would believe in?
I think we're probably still learning to do that, as you probably can tell.
Well, darling, don't forget that sometimes a sharp wit is as useful as a sharp knife and can cut just as deep.
Yeah, know that. Yeah, I can tell you've got that. I can tell you've got that down.
Well, you know, the kids are all right, and you guys are just getting started. And best of luck to the film, and to give Richard E. Grant a big hug from us. We're big fans.
And Sarah Lancaster, too. I was such a big fan of hers from Happy Valley. I really enjoyed that series, and she was so great. And when I saw she was your mom, I'm like, oh, my God, this is wonderful.
Yeah, icon and legend.
Yes.
Best of luck to you guys.
Best of luck.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you. Love to chat to you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Everybody's talking about Jamie, the musical motion picture adaptation of the musical adaptation of
the
documentary series is going to be out on Amazon Prime Video on September 17th. But first, it comes to theaters
Yes.
On
September 10th.
September 10th.
So check for where it's going to be released, and you might be able to see it in the theater, or you just wait a week later and get it on Amazon Video.
And, you know, the story is actually true, but the musical theater aspect, the singing and the dancing were added.
Right. Well, you know, I think we reported on it way back in 2011 when the documentary was first made, because, you know, Jamie made a big splash because they went to the prom and drag. And mm-hmm. so there was a whole documentary about it. And I remember us talking about it. And, you know, it's not the first time somebody's gone to prom and drag, but it got a lot of attention. I worked with a guy and he went to the same high school I did, but he did it. He graduated probably like 7 or 8 years before I did. And I went to a Catholic school and it had previously been a girl's school, but it had been switched over. It became a guy school or co-ed. And he was one of the first class members when it went co-ed. And he brought a drag queen to prom. He didn't tell anybody. He just had he was gay and knew somebody who did drag. And they just showed up and not a problem. No one cared. They all laughed. They thought it was funny. But, you know, this is probably like the early 80s, late 70s or something like that.
Yeah, I do feel like, you know, talking to these two young actors, like, how are you doing, fellow kids?
Well, you know, the thing is like what RuPaul says about drag is like it's like these windows, like you have the opportunity to do drag and they open and they close. And we see that, you know, society, we think the progress is always a straight line forward. And it's not, you know, at one point in time, you could accept a drag queen because you could laugh. But then, you know, the nature of what a drag queen is changes over time. And maybe it's not, you know, it's not cute anymore. It's threatening. And then it gets on television. And then it's just like, oh, it's just like any other art form.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the reason we got dressed up in drag when we were 18 years old feels different than what kids are doing mm-hmm. today.
Well, it's always kind of transgressive a little bit, isn't it?
A little bit.
Or is it buying into the system now?
It is definitely buying into the system because it's about like dreaming you're going to be a big star. Mm. It's a showbiz dream.
Yeah.
For us, it was rejecting that showbiz dream. We had no illusions that we were going to be famous like Madonna or Michael Jackson or
RuPaul, you know, Divine.
None of that. We were like, this is to say, give the middle finger to the system. And so it is interesting, you know, that like even everybody's talking about Jamie positions Jamie Campbell, the character mm-hmm. and the real human being mm-hmm. That Max Harwood plays as being this rebellious figure, but in some ways, like, you know, Jamie's kind of the villain in the movie.
Jamie's the villain?
Part of it, yeah, because it's like it's this insufferable child who everybody is giving their heart and soul to, for the most part.
Mother's friend.
The movie begins with the mother giving Divine cha-cha heels. You know? She gives it for celebrating his birthday party, and they're giving the young gay boy the high heel shoes he's dreamed about.
And he takes the Christmas tree that was sitting in the corner of the room since Christmas and, you know, kills his mother with it.
He doesn't, no. But it is interesting, you know,
it's acceptance. He's accepted by his mother, but he's rejected by his father.
And you know, when he meets Richard E. Grant, you know, Loco Chanel's like, oh, you're a young budding drag queen? Of course. I have all the time in the world to dedicate my life to making you a star. What about my needs? Those don't matter.
Hey, he had to pay for that dress.
Yeah. I mean, he does run a store and he's running a business and he did raise money for it. But all the other drag queens.
It's like a drug dealer, like the first kind of little bit's free.
Is that what you think it is?
Hooked, and then it's just like, oh, you wanted fake breasts? That's going to be more money. Oh, these eyelashes are only $10 each.
Well, that's what kind of, I want to go back and watch the documentary to be like, you know, is like the community is Jamie Campbell the only gay in the village, like, you know, Little Britain? Or is it a situation where there are other queer children who are like, I want to go and drag to the prom too?
And oh, like Tu Wong Fu, where all the women get their makeover.
Yeah. You know, so I'm like, part of me is like, it does feel like Jamie's character is the only queer one in the school. But, you know, these studies show they're all gay. Everybody's putting on the heels. Everyone, even you know, the character that Lauren Patel plays, Pretty, she even wears a little bit of more makeup than she's allowed to as a young Muslim woman towards the end of the film. You know, we don't want to spoil it, but you know, so you know, part of me when I was watching, I was like, you know, Jamie's not the most sympathetic character. You know, is a bit of an anti-hero to say the least. And, you know, and it is maybe just this, you know, salty drag queen and me talking. It's like she should be a little bit more appreciative of everybody.
Well, isn't that how youth is, though? Isn't that how people, especially older people, sometimes view youth as being ungrateful? You know, and they're just trying to find their place in the world. And it's a struggle and it's a fight. And people make mistakes. They can be cruel. They can be mean. They can just, they don't understand the situation. And so they're not reacting in a way that sometimes is what you would expect them to be.
And I would say that a lot of young people today that are wanting to be drag queens are very ambitious people. Mm-hmm. So they're the type of personality who would want to excel in sports and in drag and be the prom queen and be on television and be, you know, so
well, that's that velvet rage, right? The velvet rage where it's just like, I have to become I have to accomplish other things so that I'm deemed worthy of for who I am.
Yeah. So if I win the gold medal, then you'll finally love me.
You know, in queer people, a lot of times we want to be people pleasers. We want to be accepted because, you know if we're accepted by these people and we please them, they're not going to murder us because that's, you know, for a lot of people, that could be their fate. You know, when you step outside what other people expect of you, it can be very dangerous.
What do you make of the teacher in the film? I also, you know, watched a lot of the production of the musical. Mm-hmm. The West End, and I thought, you know, it was interesting that they portray this teacher as kind of this another anti-hero, a sympathetic villain.
She was an asshole.
Well, she's just basically telling people, like, don't dream, have realistic expectations. Are guidance counselors in schools today saying that to kids?
Well, you know, I don't know what kind of school you went to, but we had to take aptitude tests when we were in high school and to figure out what kind of job would be good for you, what you would be good at, those kinds of things. And so, you know, they really try and plan for these kids' future to give them some idea, because a lot of kids, they graduate, they don't know what they're going to do. And so a lot of, you know, we all have pie in the sky things. I'm going to become a podcaster. We're going to become, you know, like a Hollywood person or a YouTuber, that kind of thing. And, you know, those things are possible, but it's not going to be for everyone. So you really have to, you know, unless you're going to get stuck doing like a shitty job, you kind of need to plan for these things. So I think that she was concerned. I think she had concern for these people. And she's just like, you know, you can't just, you're not going to be the next, Sylvester Stallone. You're going to have to be something else.
But sometimes it does feel like when people are telling people not to be a podcaster or a YouTube or a TikTok mm-hmm. star or whatever, it is more because they're not doing that themselves. They're not pursuing their creative efforts.
Right. And we're also seeing just part of that conversation. You know what I mean? The flip side, because it was like, it was obviously they had some other kind of discussion about this on a previous day, and we're finding the tail end of this discussion. So, you know, maybe other things were explained, but, you know, some teachers, they like to fit things into little boxes. And when the students don't fit into those little boxes, it's exasperating.
I want to be a disgruntled public school teacher who tells students not to dream when I grow up.
Hey, I mean,
that's kind of like what Jamie does. You know, it's like challenges that notion of telling people not to dream.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, like, is that a problem today? And people who are listening, if you guys want to weigh in on this, go visit the Feast of Fun group on Facebook, facebook.com/groups/Feast of Fun, and weigh in. Do you feel that there's an epidemic, a problem of young people today not wanting to pursue careers or higher academia or knowledge? They all just want to be, you know, eat hot chip, be a TikTok star, and, you know, live their lives and die. Like, there's like no, the only ambition is fame of itself. Like, you know, like Paris Hilton or Kim Kardashian, who are, you know, we're starting to discover that they've had their, even though they're financially very well off, they've had a huge amounts of problems in their personal lives.
It's always challenging, right?
You know, it's like sometimes it is good when your parents don't give you the cha-cha heels for Christmas. Listen, but I got cha-cha heels when I was a kid.
If your parents don't give you cha-cha heels for Christmas, get a job, buy your own, or just steal them.
Buy your own damn cha-cha heels. I don't need a sugar daddy because I am what? Sickening.
Did she have a sugar daddy in the end? I don't remember.
Shangela?
Yeah.
No, she never did. Oh. Shangela is a self-made woman.
Mm.
Well, you can listen to her podcast on Feast of Fun. If you go to feastoffun.com/plus and search for Shangela. You can listen to her appearance on our show talking about her life and how she did not need a sugar daddy to buy her own cha-cha heels.
So where does this movie fit in into the pantheon of drag movies like Tu Wong Fu, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert?
Well, I think it's very, it's the Disney shell, the Disney influence, because I think this movie was originally in the hands of 20th Century Fox that got moved into Disney because it couldn't be released into theaters. They moved it to Amazon Prime Video. And but you can certainly see the Hannah Montana Glee influence more than, say, you know, Rock. I mean, you know, the star of the show hasn't even watched Rocky Horror Picture Show. Max.
He saw it on DVD, but
it has experience in person.
Yes. He's only how old? 24 now.
Listen, you know, that's no excuse.
I mean, I saw Rocky Horror Picture Show when I was in 15.
Well, and you know, like even to John Waters and Divine and all that. So, you know, drag in the spirit of rebelling and not pursuing fame and fortune, but as a way to sort of like, you know, give the establishment the middle finger.
It was punk rock.
It's punk, yeah. And so, you know, in terms of how it fits into those pantheons, you know, the music of the film isn't as catchy or evocative as the Broadway the West End musical. And so if you want to hear it, definitely the soundtrack for the West End musical, which is available on Apple Music and on YouTube, you can check that out and certainly, you know, see what they were, feel the difference.
You watched some of it on YouTube, actual, because it was
the production.
And was it a bootleg video?
It was a bootleg.
Yeah. Okay. And was it a pretty good video?
Yeah, it was excellent. It was because they filmed it for television.
Oh.
And so the British people were like, this is very important. We have to make this available to everybody in the world, you know?
Aw.
And then you can see like, for example, the opening sequence where they're dancing in the classroom. Mm-hmm. In the stage musical, the main character, you know, Jamie Campbell, is kind of like dancing like Michael Jackson and in Billie Jean, and the desks light up, which is very like fun and playful, innovative staging and choreography. I don't feel like the film does as much of justice to to that specific moment. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, in terms of Spring Awakening, another influence there of youth and the exuberance of youth and the anguish of youth. You know, the West End musical really does a beautiful job of capturing that. And I feel like sometimes that gets lost in the filming. There's a grittiness that's missing there. But like, in terms of, you know, I think it's a very sweet film, and I think a lot of young people are going to love it. And certainly, you know, the fans of RuPaul's Drag Race are going to gobble this one up and put that in their favorites. So.
Oh, that's sweet. Well, you know, in the movie they say that drag is not a TV show, though. It's a revolution. But, you know, when I think about that, we say the drag is punk and it can be. But then also, too, you have that other side of it, too, where it's kind of like you don't hear this as much anymore, but you have the people who are female illusionists. And I think because
nobody says that anymore.
Nobody really says that as much anymore. But, you know, certainly the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s and pre-Drag Race, you know, there's a lot of people out there that wouldn't call themselves a drag queen. They were a female illusionist. But now because RuPaul's Drag Race is so famous and everybody wants to do it, it's not as popular as a term as it used to be. Because that's kind of like the drag that... Is that drag a revolution?
No. It was a monetary choice. It was a career path.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so we think about, like, I'm thinking about Coco Peru, for example. In the early days of her career, she didn't want to be called a drag queen.
Mm.
And Coco would probably be like, I never said that. And I was like, roll the tape, Maury. Yes, you did.
Did she?
She did say that. She denies it, but she did say that. And other people, more famous, got Betty Davis impersonator, whose name
Charles
is
Pierce.
Charles Pierce was not a drag. Mm-hmm. Very adamant, but not being a drag. Who was a character actor, a female illusionist. Mm-hmm. Anything to avoid using LGBTQ queer language,
yes,
you know?
Or a character actor or character actress, people would say. But I think with Coco too, because you know her career path mirrored more of a drag queen from the UK's career, because in the UK, drag queens are known for singing, for cabaret, for putting on a show, whereas traditionally here in the United States, drag queens lip sync to music in bars for the most part. And I think that maybe that was part of the reason why she didn't identify as a drag queen, was not because she was shying away from being a queer person, but because she was more like, I'm, you know, putting on a show, I'm doing a cabaret mm-hmm. show, I'm not lip syncing. So that's not what I do. And I think that was probably why a lot of people identified as not drag if they didn't lip sync.
I mean, when I was a kid in the 80s, Sheffield in England mm-hmm. was associated with the band Def Leppard.
That's yeah.
And now it's associated with Leppard Prince.
Well, because Sheffield yeah. is where the movie takes place.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Def Leppard was the first band that I saw in concert. Like in like a adult style concert.
I love Def Leppard. Yeah. Yeah. Photograph.
And Crocus opened for them.
Una mina rockin' rolling. What are they saying in the beginning of that song?
I don't know.
Rock even of ages. Keep on rolling. And my mother's like, Rock of Ages. Da, da, da. She thought it was
a Christian song.
Because it is a Christian song, and they turned the Christian song into a
I wonder if Def
heavy
Leppard's
metal thing. I believe it's just nonsensical words.
I think it was supposed to sound German. Or the
bleeling, bleeling, blowing. Yeah, so Def Leppard was a big deal, and you know that's how everybody around the world knew who or what Sheffield was.
And they were, I guess they were formed in 1977. God, I probably saw them.
You were young, yeah.
Well, I would have seen them in the 80s, you know.
Yeah. First rule of drag, shoot first or before they shoot you down. That's the iron rule. Hurt others before they get a chance to hurt you. I don't like that. That bothers me, as Coco would say. You know, I like that. There's the, what did you say? There's the golden rule is to do unto others
as you would have them do unto you. And then there's the platinum rule, do unto others as they would like to have been done upon.
So it involves asking them.
Yes. Figure out what they want. Because what you think is good for you, there's a lot of ego in that. If you think what's good for you is good for them, you find out what they want and see if you can give that to them.
And it involves listening. And listening is a important first step in compassion and undoing violence mm-hmm. is just asking mm-hmm. how are you, what do you feel, you know. And I think that's in terms of like the internet, what I think podcasts do best is requiring people to sit down, and even these big stars, you know, they're sitting down and having to listen to what we're asking them, and we're listening to them in return mm-hmm. and having a, you know, brief but still meaningful conversation about being their first film role. You could tell those kids were like, hurry up, get this thing now.
You know, I wish they'd come to the home studio, but you know, can't have everything.
Yeah, we can't have everything.
They were in Chicago.
Yeah, literally they were taping this out of a hotel room in Chicago. But you know, I think in terms of like they seem like they were very green, you know, and even like, you know, Max was like, you're a salty seasoned
but,
you girl. Know,
but definitely mm-hmm. they have their acting chops, they have their performance chops, they were both brilliant in the show.
Well, those British acting schools are so rigorous.
Yes. Yeah.
They are thorough. Mm-hmm. My mother used to say that, be like, I wish that you could have gone to acting school in England. You would have loved it. And mm-hmm. I was like, what do you know about that?
Well, because people often wonder, like, why is Hollywood, you know, filled with so many British actors and stuff like that? It's because, you know, their education system supports the arts, whereas ours doesn't necessarily do that.
Mm-hmm. And you know, the British acting school, they not only do they get them deep into Shakespeare, which I think I heard LeVar Burton, plays Geordie LaForge, once said the reason why Shakespeare is important, especially in Star Trek, is because you have a lot of words you're saying that make absolutely no sense. Mm-hmm. And Shakespeare's kind of similar to that, is that you have to take this old English language and make it meaningful for people who are listening to it. And you know, it's an observational form of communication, right? So they're observing what you're saying. And in terms of the British, you know, acting traditions and academic system, they go from A to Z. They have them do like pantomime and clowning and singing, dancing, musical theater, Shakespeare, commedia dell'arte, experimental theater. They do everything.
Whereas here in the United States, if you were to get that kind of education, it's probably going to cost you a lot of money.
Well, a lot of state schools do have, you know, really good acting programs, and there's certainly lots of acting schools that you can do that kind of stuff, but it's not as accessible as it is. And it's not as, seen as a form of cultural pride. You know, like the British people love their theater and they're very proud of their theatrical heritage, and they put money into not only educating young people about it, but exporting it around the world, you know, and that's something that Americans could learn a thing or two from.
Without a doubt.
Remember, folks, Feast of Fun is made possible because of fierce, fabulous people just like you. Go to feastoffun.com/plus and access thousands, over 16 years of legendary podcasts.
So many years.
In-depth interviews with all your favorite RuPaul's Drag Race girls and actors and films and creative people about their lives and journeys.
Drag legends, Jackie Beat, Coco Peru, Hollywood Lawn.
Lady Bunny. Did I say Lady Bunny? Yeah. And RuPaul, too. And yeah.
Varla Jean Merman, RuPaul, yeah, Bianca Del Rio, all of them.
Jack
all
Plotnick,
there.
Evie Harris from Girls Will Be Girls, always and forever.
We are on our road to celebrate the milestone of our 3,000th podcast episode coming very, very shortly. So it's a celebration leading up to. It's once we get there, that's the milestone. This is a celebration, and then we're going to keep on celebrating.
And so we are asking people to help us celebrate, and we want to start a streaming show, and we're needing streaming cameras for that. So we're asking you, if you have give us a dollar, buy us a coffee or whatever, go to GoFundMe.com/FeastOfFun3000, and any amount would be greatly appreciated. Help us to get to 3,000 by our 3,000th show.
Because we do this show because of you, for the community, for the world, so that we can celebrate people and celebrate events like this major motion picture coming out, celebrating queer youth. And the way we can do that is with your support. And that's how we have done it for these past 16 years, is because people have stepped forward, taken the time out of their day to say, I need to support Feast of Fun. So that the world, I think we're making the world a better place.
Definitely. I mean, listen, if half of the youth are LGBTQ, we take a real credit for that.
We've done a pretty good job.
You're welcome, darling. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much from the bottom of our hearts for tuning in, for listening. Remember, Feast of Fun, you can subscribe to it anywhere podcasts are found, and follow us on social media at Feast of Fun. I'm Fausto Fernandes.
I'm Mark Fillion.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.